Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Good afternoon and welcome to Lords of the Zings show number 3, also known as the Return of the King edition of Cakes and Danny. It's Cakes from Junkies and Danny from Grant and Danny, because Danny, as everybody knows, the order of the books, Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring comes first, followed by the Two Towers, and then the Return of the King.
The Return of the King.
This is the Return of the King episode of Cakes and Danny.
Well, now, of course, the waters are muddied because our buddy Vic is playing a Duel of Fates from Star Wars lore.
Okay.
This, of course, is the background during the highlight scene.
Everybody knows that.
Well, of course they do. This is a John Williams composition. All he does is hit fastballs out of the yard.
Yes.
This is your Obi-Wan Qui-Gon Jinn versus Darth Maul in the palace in Thade, the capital city, of course, of Naboo, trying to retake the palace from the Viceroy of the Trade Federation, Flakes. Of course you know that.
You're getting everybody caught up to speed on that. We're conflating two different franchises, but that's
so many
cool.
Genres.
That works. It works on this show, and we're glad everybody's tuning in. Whoever is tuning in, we will take you up until 3 p.m. today here on 106.7 The Fan. Of course, we have lots planned for you. We have our good friend Joe Beninati, a.k.a. Joe B. You know him well from calling Caps games with Craig Lachlan for the last, I don't know, 100 years or so here in D.C. He's going to be on with us right around 1 p.m. Dan Kolko from Masson is going to join us in the 2 o'clock hour, right around 2:30. We'll say ish for Kolko to join Cakes and Danny. Danny is going to proctor a Game of Thrones quiz, which I will just flail at spectacularly. Maybe I will enlist the help of one JT the Vic, our producer, who also knows less than nothing about Game of Thrones, to help me.
I feel bad that I just keep whacking slap shots past you guys, but at a certain point, right? I mean, well, a couple weeks ago when we did the program together.
Yeah.
You nailed a couple Lord of the Rings ones, and it was like, it was more than zero, and it was impressive to me. For someone that doesn't know it, you somehow knew the answers. I was pretty impressed by that.
See, I made the mistake, too, yesterday of going on Twitter. I'm at Money Metal Cakes on Twitter. If you want to talk to Danny on Twitter, it's at Funny Danny. And look, I'll cop to it. I just went out to people and said, look, I'm taking a Game of Thrones quiz. If you have any trivia tidbits you can throw my way, please do. And I think that might have been a mistake, Danny, because now my head is swimming with all sorts of names and creatures and places and things. And I don't know up from down. I'm very confused. But I believe we're going to do that in the 1 o'clock hour after Joe B, around 1:20-ish.
Nice. So I have just like your pal John Paul Flame, I have a few friends that are attorneys.
Okay,
and as
very good.
My buddy always tells me the story is he'd been studying for weeks. I mean, obviously, you study so hard to pass the bar in New York State. It's apparently one of the hardest bars to pass, and most people don't pass their first time and whatever. Yeah. And so he's been studying his you-know-what off for weeks, and, like, his eyes are bleary, and they can barely keep him open. He's got to go take the bar exam. And so he gets a cab to go take the bar exam, and the cab driver is like, what are you doing? And he's like, just doesn't want to be spoken to, but, like, he's just trying to focus. He's like, oh, I'm on my way to take the bar. And the guy starts asking him legal questions.
Okay.
And starts, like apparently is, like, a guy that reads about legal stuff and reads legal blogs, just against all odds. So right before the test, he's like poisoning his mind with like the different names of cases, and he's like, "What's the one where it's Johnson versus the flag?" And, you know, just wrong right. stuff. And he's like, "Oh, for God's please shut up!" And it's just so awkward. He ends up failing the bar, and he blames the cab driver,
as he rightfully should. So yesterday on Twitter, I got, you know, like from 14 hours ago, question: what happened to Bram Stark's younger brother? I got killed by an arrow running across a field. So I guess if that is on, if that's on Danny's quiz, I guess I'll get that question right.
I had to change some of the questions based on responses. Honestly, I had a couple of those that were going to be on there, and these people gave you a nice crib sheet.
Very good. Here's another one. This person just ticks off random terms: horse lords, eunuchs, incest. Lots of it. So I guess incest
that's
is always
that's a summary. Yeah,
is always a good go-to. Demon smoke baby. I don't know what that is. I don't have any idea. But maybe it'll be one of my answers. And rounding it out, undead ice people. So these are, I guess, things I'm missing from watching Game of Thrones.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. I'm telling you, the show was amazing. The final season, or really final couple of seasons, just weren't the same because they sort of sped it up because the two creators were trying to leave to go do Star Wars. Okay. And now they're not even doing that Star Wars project anymore. They're doing nothing. So I don't know what the hell that was all worth.
Yeah.
But the beauty of that show, Cakesy, and for someone that likes Homeland, I know they're not the same. I'm not trying to tell you they're the same. One is like international espionage and spy craft and trade craft and all that kind of stuff and some, you know, really cool thing. The slow burn and the willingness to sort of build characters and go in depth, that's what made Game of Thrones special.
Yeah.
Not, you know, the action shots. I mean, those are cool. The battles and stuff were so amazing. And the show was incredible for years. And then the ending kind of spoiled it, so people have a bad taste in their mouth. But I'm telling you, it's well worth an investment. If I could ever get Johnny Cakesolvo in front of a television with some focus, you would like it.
I really am hoping that this is the answer to one of the questions. This is from our friend Justin Schlegel, who does mornings on 98 Rock in Baltimore. He said, "The albino chick rode a dinosaur and burned Middle Earth to the ground in season 8. Made his 43-year-old cousin, who's a brony, which is very weird, super sad that it didn't line up with his fan fiction. So he signed a petition that HBO all laughed at." That's how, I guess that's how seriously people get into their GOT, into the Game of Thrones. So
once the content from the author was like he stopped writing books. I mean, he like inched forward. George R.R.R. Martin. Like, he's inching forward on his like Commodore 64 computer, and he's not producing books at a fast enough pace. So he like kind of gave them an outline of where it was going to go.
Okay.
And once it got past, see, all right, now we're getting into the weeds.
So hold on. So what you're saying, in a nutshell, so he basically gave them a template, and now like HBO is just like doing their own thing. Like, the writers are doing their own thing with the template that he's provided, and people are going crazy because of it?
Pretty much. Close? So once the final
I'm over my skis here, Danny. You know.
But everything you've said is you're right on. So when you have original content, the discussion is, well, they changed a couple things from the original content. And that's the discussion, right? They did it this way. They did that way. That's all normal. Once you don't have the original anymore, it's now more towards the vision of the creators of what they can and can't do on television. So because there's nothing to compare it to, all the fanboys like me and Justin's brony cousin are judging it on is you can't compare it to anything because that's it. And so now you start whining because it's not what you thought it was going to be.
Okay.
So the point that he made there was actually so perfect because there's so many of us going, I know exactly how it's going to go. It's John's going to end up sitting on the Iron Throne. Actually, you know what's going to happen is he's going to ride a dragon. Tyrion's going to ride a dragon because he's actually half Targaryen. Blah! And none of that stuff happened. So everybody was secretly pissed off about that.
All right.
In addition to the last part of the show not being that sweet.
So is George R. 100 R's Miller, is he just... is he out of ideas, or is he so rich now that he just doesn't care about writing?
That one.
It's that. He's so rich and cheated up, he doesn't care.
Here's what happened. He wrote these bad boys.
Because that would be me, by the way. Once I got all of the riches, there's going to be, you guys are going to have to deal with reruns. Okay?
Like, hey, work really hard. Well, you're making so much money now.
I just looked at my 401k. Turns out I don't have to work that hard anymore.
Yeah, I'm going to take my time on this one, and thank you. Yeah. But he's a prodigious writer, just a big, fat nerd, and he's wonderful. And he gave us so many gifts, and I love him for it forever. So he reads it. The first one came out in like the 90s. I discovered the first one back in the 90s, right? And it was like a thing that I read because, again, I didn't have great friends and wasn't popular, and that's sort of the end of that story.
Right.
And I loved it, and I would read these books like kind of as they came out and would go through it.
Now, did you discover Game of Thrones? Was it just you stumble on it organically? Was it like because you were into something else that you fell headfirst into it? I need to know the Danny Hoo-ha origin story for the GOT. GOT today, by the way.
So much. It's from 12 like to 12:10.
It's going to be a third of the show today, minimum.
All right. So, your boy obviously is into J.R.R.R. Tolkien, okay, with Lord of the Rings.
Established.
So many guys with R's as their middle names, okay? So, that was the first like major huge story that I remember. My parents read that to me when I was a little kid, and I've read the books many times over, and I love them so much, they mean so much to me, okay? So then you look for like your Amazon button you might also like. You know what I mean? Like that's a thing. That's something that happens, something related. So I discovered the Shannara series by Terry Brooks, okay? So Terry Brooks is a dork as well, but he just never stops writing, and he's written about this mythical place called Shannara, and there's a huge variance and hundreds of years of history and stuff, and it's very rich and it's deep. They've never turned it anything until MTV tried to make their own sort of teenage version of Game of Thrones with the Shannara series,
and
it was muddled and it stunk, and everyone was attractive in 22, okay? So, but whatever, who cares about that? So I see those. And then this
Hold
is
on,
your
so
first.
They were trying to do road rules, and then they try to do like a Shannara. doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't get but they listen. It, you know, every network's like bring. It, you know, it's like every when an owner sees the Rams scoring 60 points and Sean McVay just handsome as hell on the sideline with a flat top, they're going, bring me that. Yeah. I want a coordinator that's less than 34.
Get
please,
me the Cliff
you know?
Kingsbury. Then that okay, that makes sense.
Right. Bring me Zach Taylor, whoever that guy is.
Right.
So that's what every network exec's trying to do too. So I read all those. I love those books. They're so good. Shout out to Al-Anon and the Druids. The wizards are incredible. They shoot Druid fire out of their hands, just manifest it through their own spiritual energy. It's incredible. Jakaira that killed Al-Anon, I'll never forgive him. But the point is, I read these and I love them. And this is my first foray into you might also like at a bookstore.
Okay.
Right? It's just sitting right there, yellow cover. It's paperback by this point.
Okay.
A little something called A Song of Ice and Fire. That's your real title.
All right.
That's the series. And the first book is called The Game of Thrones. And I'm going, what? What is that? And a dude with his pocket protector was also protected. It had like a lining.
Yeah.
And these are my people. That's who I trust. And like his hair was weird. It was, the sides were longer than the top. And everything about him was like off-putting and ugly, and he didn't smell good. And I'm like, this is the guy that speaks to me.
This guy's an expert. This guy knows.
He knows. And so I'm sitting there. He sees me in the store, sitting there looking at it. And I'm not even kidding you. This is what he sounds like. He's like, "Yo, have you ever read any of Martin's stuff?" And I'm like, "Really? Like this is you're not doing a character? Okay, fine." And we start talking about video games that we like, and he's talking about how Tomb Raider is derivative but still really fun.
Right.
And he's torn between the portrayal of women but the puzzle solving is great.
Right.
And I'm sitting there going, yeah, yeah. And he goes, "What's your favorite summon in Final Fantasy VII?" And I'm like, "It's not Action Knights of the Round, it's Bahamut." And he's like, "I know, mine too." And I'm like, "Oh my God, like we have something in common."
Like, this
and
he guy's goes, my spirit animal.
Yeah. And he goes, "Trust me, you are going to absolutely love this." And he picks the book off the shelf and like puts it in my chest.
Right.
Like he's entrusting me with the football. You know what I mean? Like this is your life now.
Yeah. Now you have no choice. Right. You have to buy this.
And so I don't even remember why I was in a bookstore. Like who goes to bookstores? But I did. I was there. I think we're there to like pick up a book for my sister or something like that for school. And like I take it up to the counter and I'm like, "All right, here's, you know, $7.99 for this paperback." And your boy was blown away.
Right.
I go, this is how I felt reading Lord of the Rings. This is how I felt reading some of the Shannara books. This is how I felt reading some of the novelizations of Star Wars. Like, this world kicks ass. I'm in. And that's like as a teenager in the 90s.
You're like, sign me up. Give me as much of this,
bring me this
as
content.
I can possibly get.
That's right.
Just
bring
shovel
me this
it
content.
In. Just shovel.
Mm-hmm.
Need more content as much as possible. Okay, good. I like that I now have the origin story for Danny with Game
of
Thrones.
And I'm so sorry.
No, it's all good. Now my head is swimming with Shannara. I barely know what that is.
Did you sleep on
young,
the Shannara
young
Chronicles?
Danny you sleep. In a, young Danny in a Barnes & Noble, just perusing all this. The sci-fi section, by the way. Now, I haven't
fantasy,
been to the
please. So, fantasy,
science
not
fiction,
sci-fi.
Hold on. There's a line of demarcation?
Of course there is, Cakesy. Of course there is.
Wait a second. So does Game of Thrones has to fall into fantasy, right?
Fantasy.
Or sci-fi?
Fantasy. Fantasy.
They're not lumped together in the same section in like
no.
a...
No. Cakesy, they should be 10 miles apart with dividers. Now, people that like science fiction, cool. That's different, buddy. Fantasy.
Now, it's been a while since I've been in a bookstore, but sometimes they would have the audacity to lump in, like, because I used to be a horror mark back in the day. Now, I don't do a lot of reading these days, but your younger Johnny Flakes used to be like a big Stephen King guy.
Sure.
Horror guy. Sometimes they would lump the horror in. It would be like horror / science fiction, all kind of thrown together. Which would tilt horror Flakes, because I'd be like, why is this science fiction mucking up the horror section? I just felt like a big, giant nerd. Just the biggest. The biggest nerd that ever nerded. As I'm trying to find, like, a hardback copy of Pet Sematary.
Oh, silly.
Way back in the day.
I'll give you an example. In my opinion, and this might be a scalder. This might be something you need oven mitts
super
for.
Super-duper hot take. All right.
My hot take is Stephen King's best work as a writer. Okay, so he's got projects that were turned into amazing things, like The Shining pummels everything, and it's so great. And,
right.
You know, Shawshank and a million other things. I think his best work as a writer is the Dark Tower series, which you are.
Here's Flakes.
I'm so comfy on my pillow and my Casper mattress.
What tower?
It's raining outside, and the pitter-patter helps me sleep longer.
All right. Let me just tell you this.
Tower.
This guy over here, here's where his Stephen King wheelhouse was. Cujo, The Shining, The Stand, Christine. Who doesn't love a story about a possessed car, Danny? A possessed old-school, like, 1950s car that kills a bunch of people that wronged him.
Dude,
I mean, who doesn't love that?
You're not going to get me to say bad stuff about his books. I'm not telling you there's anything wrong. What I'm telling you is the Dark Tower series was the silliest of the silly. This was him doing the thing that he very rarely does, which is, I'm going to build a world. Every other story he did was like this one-off and awesome, by the way. All really, really good things.
Yep.
But he wrote this series of books where he basically would churn one out every 3 or 4 years. Every time he got bored, he'd sit down and write kind of another annal in this great log, and they tried to make all of the books into one as a movie with Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey. I'm the dark wizard, man. It's all, everything's bad. I'm trying to knock down the tower, brother, and everything. And the movie stunk, and it broke my heart that it stunk. It should have been a television show and long running, and basically could have been like a Game of Thrones part two that everyone would have loved. But that book, for example, the reason I bring it up, those books, fantasy. Not sci-fi,
right?
Fantasy.
Okay.
See what I'm saying? That's a distinct category.
It's much like people who are into either comic books and or graphic novels. They don't want them lumped together, correct?
Don't like, you dare lump them.
You can't lump a comic book together with a graphic novel, or people just get very, very upset.
So for you, as you're walking around today, living your life, your basic difference typically is science fiction is pretty much, if you got a dystopian future, if you've got a lot of technology, like Terminator science fiction.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Anything like is this like Terminator versus is this like magic? Right. If there's Gandalf the Grey and I've got a staff and I'm using spells for it. Nope. Fantasy.
Okay.
Fantasy. Yeah. Magic, fantasy, technology, sci-fi. There are exceptions, and sometimes I will admit they can sort of cross over, and what is Star Wars, and then you have to go into mysticism, and I don't know the answer. Point is, that's a good way to separate them.
Yes. All right. You know what? I'm learning things on the Return of the King edition of Cakes and Danny. It's always good to learn things. It's always good to have an open mind, Danny.
So yes, man.
This is a good thing. All right, when we come back, maybe we'll pivot. Maybe we'll talk some sports. Today's a big anniversary in Washington Nationals land. It's the anniversary of 19 and 31. We'll touch on that, and we'll touch on the fact that Grant and Danny are going to be on Facebook Live during the Nats ring ceremony. So we'll do that and more when we come back on Cakes and Danny on The Fan.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Lords of the Zings, show number 3. This is the Return of the King edition. Everybody knows that. It's Cakes and Danny. We're taking you up till 3 p.m. today right here on 106.7 The Fan. In the 2 o'clock hour, I'm going to give Danny another music quiz, and the topic this week is bands that Flakes has seen in concert.
Ooh, buddy.
I'm guessing most of these bands that Danny's not seen in concert. But I'm going to say he's heard of at least 4 of the 5 bands. And you know what? Danny, I'm just going to have you ID the band. You don't need to give me the song. If you want to give me extra credit and give me the song title as well, you're more than welcome to do that.
Okay.
So that's what we're doing in the 2 o'clock hour. I will be taking a Game of Thrones quiz. And I'll look like a jackass when I'm taking it because I know nothing. That's in the that's after Joe Beninati joins us. But we wanted to touch on an important anniversary for Washington Nationals fans. It was a year ago today where the Nats were at their bottom. They were 19-31. And look, Danny's forgotten more about the Nats than I will ever know in the last 5 minutes. He's a Nats expert. But I know on the Junk Show, there was a lot of doom saying and a lot of, you know, is Davey going to survive this? Are the Nats going to trade Anthony Rendon? Is Mike Rizzo's job in jeopardy? There was a lot of that sort of talk a year ago today, and you fast forward a year, and you and Grant are going to be on the Facebook Live tonight celebrating the World Series ring design.
So truly remarkable.
A lot can change in the span of a few months. But a year ago today, Nats Nation was not what you would call optimistic heading toward the rest of that season.
So they come back, Cakesy, from as disastrous a 4-game sweeping to lose 5 in a row, 6 of 7, after they lost 2 of 3 to the Cubs. They lose all 4 games to the Mets. Mm-hmm. And I believe they had leads in all 4 of them, 8th-inning leads in 3 of the 4, if memory serves. And the bullpen, which was the worst ever assembled for the first half plus of the season, blew all those games. And they were in position to win. And Grant and I both, and not that we're, you know, anything special or whatever, but we both said, you know what? Friday, May 24th, they're playing the Marlins. We're going to Nats Park. Mm-hmm. We told our respective spouses and said, you know, find something to do with the kids. We got to go over there because we think that Davey Martinez is getting fired.
Right.
We'd hurt. And we were wrong, obviously. I mean, is not, I'm not braggadocious. So we're thinking we need to be there for, you know, potential news and to get the vibe and see what's going on. And we both, you know, independently had this idea that we shared with the others. And yeah, we're both going. So we go. Not only do they win in a game where they didn't play very well, by the way, and it was ugly. They went 12-10 over the Marlins, the worst team assembled since teams have been assembled.
Such an over. But if you bet the over in that game, you're just counting your money.
No
kidding. Love it.
But the next night, the 25th, really to me is the turning point. Patrick Corbin throws a complete game shutout. They win three or four in that series. Then they go down and give a little Mississippi two-piece to the Atlanta Braves, and now they're kind of off and running. Even though they start playing better, they win 5 of 6 right there real quick, right? A long weekend shows you how things can change. We're still going, you guys, the math isn't on their side here. They could play great baseball, and there's a great chance it's not enough.
Sure.
They need basically 105-win pace to get to 90 wins,
yeah,
give or take, and then they did that for months.
Because it's not like 19 and 31 is not a small sample size. It's not like you're a dozen games in. You're like, oh, you know what? There's plenty of time here. 162-game season. This is going to get sorted out. I mean, 50 games is a sizable chunk of your season, and I don't think that we were out of line, or you guys, or Chad Dukes, or anybody on the station was by saying, this team's in trouble. They've taken on a serious amount of water, and it's looking unlikely that they're going to climb their way out of it. But give them credit. They were able to do it, and
of course,
it was a remarkable turnaround by that team and by Davey and by all the leaders in that team that helped them get to where they needed to be.
Well, here's the thing, Casey. This wasn't just, oh man, this year's a bummer. This is, you got to put 2018 in context, and this never really gets brought up in the conversation. The fact that the Nationals were supposed to be just as good, if not better, in 2018, and they underachieved in a major, major, major way. This was a group that was, at the end of May the year before, well on their way. They were 10 games over 500. At the end of May in 2018, and looked the part. They looked like they were going to be really, really good, and they were going to win the division and do all the things that you'd expect them to be. It wasn't really until the middle of June that they started to hit the skids and just never got right. They were 500 in the middle of July, and then below 500. Next thing you know, they barely finished over 500, 82-80 at the end of the season. And so the context of that year before, where they underachieved, all the camels, all the cabbage smashing, all the dumb stuff that irked everybody, as they just moved on from a guy that had won 190 some games over 2 years in Dusty Baker. You're going, are you sure? Are you sure this is it?
Yeah.
And so there's a context, there's a backdrop. It's not just, oh, they're off to a bad 50 game sample, let's fire somebody. Nats fans were rightfully upset and ticked off because this window seemed like it was being slammed shut. So you're right. Credit to it's really just a few people. Yeah, the players obviously started playing better, and that was the biggest deal. But Rizzo knew, Davey knew, and ownership trusted and empowered their guys to be able to stick with what they knew. They knew this wasn't a Matt Williams situation. They knew Davey Martinez was different, and credit to them to sticking to their guns while the noise was overwhelming, both locally and nationally.
Yeah, and especially to Rizzo, too. Like he would always come on with us, and he's been on with you guys in the past where he's remarkably level-headed. He doesn't let, one game or two or three games, taint the way he views his team and his process and the way he runs an organization. And give him credit for sticking to his guns and sticking with Davey and not panicking and saying, you know what, this is just not working out. We're going to have to pull the plug on Davey. He realized that he brought him in here for a reason. He realized that as good as Dusty had been, that wasn't good enough. They needed to be better. And he felt like Davey could make them better. And I give a lot of credit to Rizzo and to the ownership group for empowering him to stick to his guns and stick with Davey through this. And we see the fruit that it's borne at this point.
100%. I mean, so Grant and I fought about this almost every day. And, we would disagree, and I'll still disagree with him. And he would, if he was on right now with you, he would disagree with me. The injuries that they endured, obviously the guys like Trey Turner, Juan Soto, Anthony Rendon, obviously a factor. You'd be crazy to say that wasn't a factor. That wasn't the reason they were as bad as they were, in my opinion. The reason they were as bad as they were is that Anibal Sanchez had an ERA over 7 for basically the first couple months. Their bullpen was the worst ever assembled. Yan Gomes set a career high for passed balls in the first 6 weeks of the season. Brian Dozier was hitting under 200 for most of it. Juan Soto got off to a terrible start, which, normally isn't a crime, but when everybody else stinks too, it's a disaster, right? It was so, everybody was playing so poorly that's really what this was. I'm not saying they would have been 31-19 had everything gone normally, because again, they were injured, they were experiencing some problems. You're not going to be as good without one of the best players in the world, Anthony Rendon, in your lineup, or Juan Soto in your lineup. Again, I'm not crazy, but they could have been treading water. They could have been 500. They could have set themselves up for once everybody got back and hit the ground running. you could do some things because they had leads, Cakesy.
That oh, I know. Inning, I remember. They had plenty of leads.
You've got, and you're going to blow some of those games. But if things were just normal, if everybody behaved normally, if Juan Gomes, I'm sure that's a person. If Yan Gomes behaves normally, they're not,
right.
You know, 12 games under 500.
Just have a normally bad bullpen. Just don't have the worst bullpen ever assembled in the history of baseball. Just don't have that, and you're going to be okay.
If Anibal Sanchez is, again, in for his first handful of starts, not a disaster, then you're fine. I mean, a number of things had to go wrong and were going wrong in addition to the injuries. And to me, that's why they were as bad as they were. I don't think anybody, a couple people might have, but most people wouldn't have complained if through 50 games they were 25-25 with the injuries they endured.
Sure.
The fact that they were that low, just, again, based on terrible. Remember Adam Eaton was getting picked off and couldn't play defense?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Adam Eaton's great. All of a sudden, couldn't do that for the first month. Victor Robles was a collapsed circus tent on the bases for the first couple months. Part of that's him being young, but the other part is, oh my God, it's the major leagues, please get right. That stuff started to get cleaned up, went away, and they played better, Cakes.
Refresh my memory on this too, Danny. After Sanchez's just atrocious start, didn't he then just pivot and have a bunch? He was stoning guys. Like, he came out and he looked like Roger Clemens for a while. Like he was so spectacularly bad, and then I want to say he had like a 4 or 5 game stretch where he was almost unhittable.
Like, yeah, he got right.
I don't know what happened. Like, it was weird just to see like that quick 180 from him, and then, you know, other guys started coming around too. You know, they were getting out of those losing ways that they were in. You know, the bullpen improved. I mean, not greatly, but it got better. It wasn't the worst on the planet. But yeah, I just remember that Sanchez all of a sudden went from, like, you were embarrassed to bring him out on the mound to, what's this guy doing? How is he recapturing what, you know, he was doing before he came to the Nats?
Yeah, it ultimately started, again, the first month in April. He made 6 starts, finished the month with an ERA of 6.
Yeah.
And not only that, but he couldn't pitch deep into games because of his pitch count and the rest of the deal. So he's taxing the worst bullpen in the sport, maybe one of the worst bullpens ever assembled. And he was killing them. So not only if you eat innings and save the bullpen, okay, you can give up some runs and maybe the team wins half those games that you're pitching. They're not winning his starts. It just says L next to his name. Even if he doesn't get the loss, he's not giving them a chance. And that was killing them, right? So you look at some of the game logs, Cakesy, through the first, you know, 7-8 weeks of the season. It's 4.1, 4.2, 5.2, 4.0 in terms of innings pitched. That's killer over the long haul for a team. So he was awful. Then the calendar turns to June, and he starts dealing. Really, his first great start was the end of May against Atlanta. But once that he finally settled into the groove, and, you know, they sort of made Yan Gomes his personal catcher, and Gomes got right as well, he starts dealing. That starts the transformation. You stop getting picked off. Adam Eaton starts playing normal right field defense, whatever it is, right? You know, through the first 50 games, they weren't good. They were injured, and You know, just the fact that they were able to stick to it and do that. Think of the other teams that they've had over the course of the years. Remember, I think it was one of the Matt Williams teams where they were going to go into the season with Blake Treinen as their closer and sort of an untested bullpen, a theme here with the Nationals. They got off to a rotten start and never recovered. And that was it. They hung their heads and they said, "Woe is me," and just sort of never really played well. We all expected them to play well at some point, and it never happened. That's different than this group. I mean, in 2018, they went into a funk and never came out somehow. Just a year before, most of the guys were the same guys. The manager was the same. For whatever reason, this year, this group, just everybody, there were no egos. Everyone pulled the rope in the same direction. You know, guys who were thought they had everyday jobs, like Brian Dozier, are replaced, and he's the clubhouse leader in dancing.
Right.
You know, it was a great group, man.
If you want to weigh in on the Nats' anniversary of 19-31, 800-636-1067, we can take your calls when we get back. And we might also touch on the fact that Funny Danny looks a little bit different when I'm seeing him on the Zoom. So
terrible.
We will touch on that as well when we come back on Cakes and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to Lords of the Zings, show number 3 with Funny Danny, at Funny Danny on Twitter, and Cakes from the Junkies, at Money Metal Cakes. Coming up at 1 o'clock, Joe Beninati is going to join us. We'll catch up with him, see how he's handling the quarantine. I know he's missing the lacrosse Final Four that should have gone down this weekend. We'll talk to him about that and the Caps and much more coming up at 1. Taking your calls at 800-636-1067 as we are on the one-year anniversary of the Nationals' 19-31 start to their 2019 campaign that ultimately ended in a World Series victory. Need to let Danny give some shine to his appearance tonight with Grant on Facebook Live as you guys will be coinciding with their ring design unveiling ceremony. Now, it's changed a little bit within the last day or so. The initial plan, you can correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, was to have the players get their rings, to celebrate that virtually, along with fans and media of the like, tonight on the one-year anniversary of the 1931, celebrating the World Series victory. Now, it's changed a bit. The rings will not be distributed, but you will see the ring design. I believe I'm correct on that.
Yeah, and this is fluid, right? So it doesn't even list the program on my Xfinity at this point, right?
Right.
So Masson still says it's a Nats Classic where Max Scherzer pitches well or something like that. So,
yes.
But it is. It's on at 7 after their own part 2 of their documentary entitled Improbable. Part 1 last night, by the way, was great. It was Nats porn as far as I'm concerned. It was a lot of fun. And so sign me up for that. So Grant and I will hop on. You can just go to the 106.7 The Fan Facebook page, and we will be there sort of reacting as they react, right? We're watching along with you, so you could check us out there. A little second screen action, Flexi. That's
very
the plan.
Good. Got to get those extra screens in play. So good that you guys will be doing that tonight starting at 7 p.m. But we've been asking for a few calls, and Chris is coming through from Hyattsville, wants to weigh in on the Nats turnaround. What's up, Chris? You're on with Cakes and Danny.
What's going on? How you doing, guys?
Buddy, Chris.
You know, one thing. Good. One thing I wanted to state is that I think that's really remarkable about last year is it's another case of sort of Rizzo digging a hole and then digging his way out of that hole. Because Rizzo, in my opinion, is right up there with Bobby Bether in terms of the best executives in D.C. sports history. And he might surpass Beathard at one point. But if he has one Achilles heel, it's building bullpen, especially with free agents. And he tried to cobble together a bullpen last year from some has-beens and some, you know, shots in the dark with guys like Bear Claw. And it really just kind of blew up in his face. But then, you know, to quote Jim Carrey, you know, to Jeff Daniels, he totally redeemed himself by getting a guy like Parra, who injected a lot of enthusiasm and spark into the team. You know, he made some other moves, like for Cabrera. And then, you know, some other things that he had done in the past, like, you know, bringing back Howie Kendrick and so on, and sticking with Davey Martinez, which can't be understated, is really his strength, is believing in his own plan. So I don't know. I'm sure in baseball communities, Rizzo is really, really well respected, but I don't know if he honestly gets enough cred even here or nationally for the job he's done in this town.
Yeah, I think he deserves, thank you for the call, we appreciate it. I think he deserves a tremendous amount of respect and credit for just having the Nats always at that level where you know they're going to compete for the NL East, they're going to make the postseason, and hopefully they're designed for long postseason runs. You know, it's kind of like, you know, the way the Capitals were built for so many years, but they just couldn't break through under George McPhee. The Caps were always that team that, did well during the regular season. You knew they were going to be playoff bound. And then for whatever reason, they would just have spectacular flameouts in the playoffs. I mean, we've seen that, Danny. I mean, you've grown up here. I'm preaching to the choir that that's the same template that Rizzo goes with. He wants to have a competitive team every year that has a chance to make the playoffs, and then when they're in the playoffs, make that run, and they were able to do that last year in 2019.
And the parallels between the two runs, Cakes, are impossible to ignore.
Yeah,
I mean, think about the Capitals story, right, where there was an opponent they could not get past.
Mm-hmm.
We know who they are. They're a little bit north, a little bit west, and their uniforms look like a bumblebee. I hate them so much. You know, the Nationals, they had to vanquish both of their demons, right? They had to beat L.A., who stole from them, and the Cardinals, who stole from them all the way back in 2012.
Yep.
You're right. You know the dynamic. And you also have managers that were on the precipice of getting let go,
mm-hmm.
or coaches, in the case of Barry Trotz, and, you know, coming back the way that they did in each and every series, even within games. Caps go down 2-0 to start their postseason run to go to the Stanley Cup, because of course they did. You know, they're down against Tampa. They're down 1 game against Vegas, and we know how, you know, everything went in that regard. So, yeah, the similarities are glaring and obvious.
And by the way, I should give some shine, obviously, to Brian McClellan, the guy who was able to, you know, tweak the roster to the point where he got them over the hump. He got, you know, he would make those key additions at the trade deadline and bring in that defenseman that they needed or whatever piece they might need to keep them competitive in the playoffs. So it was McPhee's blueprint, and to get, you know, obviously the cornerstones of the team. I mean, Ovechkin, Backstrom, draft those guys. I mean, you or I could have drafted those guys, Danny. But it's the smaller pieces, the smaller moves that maybe people aren't appreciating to help keep that team together. And McClellan was finally able to fine-tweak it and eventually get over the hump.
You know what you and I also could have done is not traded Forsberg for Erat. We probably could have done that.
We also could have not done that, yes. That's correct.
You know how you and Valdez are the motion picture guys that give the thumbs up or thumbs down?
Yes, we're the yes-no men. We're still waiting to I believe now there's like an artificial intelligence program that is trying to ace us out of our consulting gig that would be so lucrative, Danny. Just imagine, okay, we're going off on a tangent here. Just imagine me and Valdez walking into like a movie studio, but a mm-hmm. huge conference room, all the head honchos, and they tell us, hey, you know what? We're going to spend $180 million to do the latest Terminator movie. And when Valdez and I say, wait a second here. Let's pump the brakes, my friend. I think Terminator has reached its maximum level of popularity. Let's not spend $200 million on a franchise that it's well past its due date. Hence, pay us $3 million for those nuggets and save yourself, I don't know, $190 million in the process. It's genius, Danny. It just is.
Of course it is. The yes, no man. By the way, did any franchise miss its window like Terminator? Like, after Terminator 2 in, like, the early 90s, people were like, yep, bring me the content.
Give us
Let's
more.
Because it was incredible. Terminator 2, as good as Empire Strikes Back in terms of sequels. I mean,
amazing.
It was phenomenal. And then the next movie they make is 20 years later, Edward Furlong.
No.
And they just blew up the continuity.
So much Claire Danes in it, female Terminator.
And it stunk.
Wacky. Again, the yes-no men. We're open for business. We need to incorporate. We need to get this ball rolling immediately.
Johnny, Matt, here's what we're thinking about. It's called Terminator Dark Fate. Okay, Linda Hamilton hasn't worked in 26 years. We drag her. Next project, please.
On the flip side, when Valdez and I learned of the low-budget movie Crawl about killer alligators, and it was made for like $8 million, we said, green light that. It's going to make a ton of money at the box office. And of course it did. Any low-budget horror movie, Danny, that's done even in a mediocre fashion, all it does is kill at the box office. Everybody knows this. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows the template.
It's the Saw corollary, right? That's the formula. That's all you got to do is you make a horror movie for very little money. You get 7 or 8 jump scares. If you get a girl with really aggressive bangs who died under fishy circumstances to crawl on the ceiling with some editing, you get yourself a moneymaker. You'll triple your investment.
Now, my weak spot, Danny, would be any sort of Final Destination pitch. I'm going to green light it because I'm a stupid sucker for that. I don't know why for that franchise. I have a soft spot. So we could walk in and they say, you know what? We're bringing back Final Destination 15 years later, and we're going to spend $200 million on it. I'd give it the thumbs up. Now, these might talk me off the ledge.
Well, that's why there's two of you. That's checks and balances.
Exactly.
I love it.
So I apologize for that tangent.
Don't you dare apologize to me.
Let's go to Mitch in Jersey before the break. What's up, Mitch? How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing? Being safe.
What's up,
good
buddy?
Show.
Thank you.
Thank you, buddy.
It just seems that. Thank you. And Dan, I hope your comedy is. I know you still got the midday show. I hope your comedy's come along. Go with that. I wish Mike Tyson would not even bother trying to fight, because he was pretty good. I'm sure you've seen his stand up. He was pretty good. I thought he had another career. But he's doing it for charity, I heard. Although what I call about the Nats, I mean, they've let go of two homegrown good hitters. I think potential Hall of Famers in Harper and Rendon. Do you think they made enough pickups to make up for the losses? I wish they could have kept them. I know that the money's outrageous, but I wish they could have kept those two guys.
So Harper, they made up for it. The formula, thanks for the call, Mitch. The formula that people use, Kixie, is basically your run differential. Over the course of a huge sample, how many runs you score, how many runs you give up. You lose Bryce Harper out of a lineup, you're going to score fewer runs, right? You replace his at-bats with Adam Eaton's at-bats or Victor Robles' at-bats, you know, whatever. You're going to score fewer runs. You got to figure out how to give up less runs, right? That's the formula. So if you have a certain run differential, your record will end up in the right way. Now, they ended up scoring more runs over the course of 2019 season than they did in 2018 for a million reasons. In fact, set a team record doing so. But the formula they figured out was, we'll just give up less, and we replace him with Patrick Corbin. They didn't replace Anthony Rendon with anything.
Right.
This go-around.
That's a problem.
That is an issue. And I understand how it happened. I get it. I'm over being mad about it. I have a World Series, which is a delicious taste in my mouth that I want to keep chewing on. But that is a problem. That is an issue. They didn't fix it. You're just sort of hoping that other guys that haven't done it yet step up in a way. Again, Robles is probably the key to that. He needs to have a monstrous season. You put a lot of pressure on Soto and some of the other guys that are, you know, part-timers at this point in their career to be excellent when they are in part-time roles, be it as Rubel Cabrera or, you know, Howie Kendrick coming off an amazing season. But this is it's hard to replace a guy that probably, you know, should have been second or third in MVP voting.
Hour one is in the books. When we come back, we're going to pivot and talk some Capitals hockey with Joe Beninati from NBC Sports Washington. That's coming up on Cakes and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.